Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Want to get a little more from every sip? Smartwater Alkaline doesn't just taste crisp and pure. It's loaded with everything you need to perform at your best, whether you're running marathons or boardroom meetings. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.
Welcome back to the 750. I am your ORJ Ochoa. He is your 75, Mr. Two-time Super Bowl champion, College Football Hall of Famer, Tony Casillas, that College Football Hall of Fame located in Atlanta, Georgia. And it's time for Atlanta, Tony. It's Super Bowl time.
And it's a great place to have a Super Bowl. And I know you're going to be going there, but yes, it's great to be with you here on Monday after, I would say, an epic weekend of NFC and AFC championship games. Just unbelievable, remarkable controversy. The GOAT is the GOAT of all time. A lot of things unfolded on Sunday.
You're right. And obviously the 750 is a Cowboys-centered show, but you know, hey, I mean, it's the NFL, and so it is worth talking about the two teams that are headed to Atlanta. I saw, Tony, that you posted on all social channels after the NFC Championship game, a finger up to your lips, kind of silencing, and the hashtag, I believe, said Silence of the Saints. So what's going on? Were you happy that the Rams won?
Well, you're right, and this is Blogging the Boys, and we're obviously geared towards the Cowboy content, but since this is the championship weekend, we got to talk about it, all things and all. Well, here's the whole thing, because I hear a lot of backlash from the Saints fans and the noxiousness and everything else that goes along with that. And I guess it all started with a friend of mine that's a Saints fan, and he is pretty obnoxious when it comes to the Cowboys losing and when he's cheering for the Saints. But I think maybe it was my very disappointed and frustration with the Cowboys and which way they've gone, and have to hear how long it's been since the Cowboys have been to an NFC championship. Mm-hmm. So I thought it was just kind of poke the bear out there for the Saints fan. I think it was more targeted to two or three fans that I knew that follow me on social media.
Good for you. Good for you trolling. I like it. I approve. How about that the missed pass interference call heard around the world? That was atrocious.
It really was. First of all, it was kind of hard to see the angle. And you know, for me, I'm going to be, I guess, a little biased towards the defense, because I think the offense usually gets the calls, and because it's kind of an offensive league. But I think that when you look at the big games, for the most part, the officials are going to let the players play. Mm-hmm. And let them bang against each other. We've seen that. I think we've seen that through the season. But that call right there after the – And again, I guess I was Rams biased. I mean, without a question, that was a horrible call. It's probably one of the worst calls in a big game that I've ever seen or witnessed. And, you know, how did he interpret that as not being pass interference? I will never understand. And, you know, they've come out today and said, yeah, it's definitely a pass interference call. But, yeah, look, I mean, there's so many calls that have controversial calls that have occurred this year, but I think when a game like that, there's other ways you got to really just either refute it, or the ability to refute it, or instant replay, because that's a very costly error by an official.
Yeah, I was thinking about this because in the aftermath of it all, a lot of Rams players have come out and kind of joked about, yeah, we got lucky there. Yeah, it was definitely pass interference, whatever. And I was wondering if you're a Saints fan, is it better or worse that they're acknowledging that it was a penalty that didn't get called? If they denied it, then at least it's easier to hate them.
But the it's fact painful.
That it's just, man, and you know, speaking of painful, I saw Adam Schefter tweeted that nobody in NFL history had ever had, you know, such painful losses as the Saints have in the playoffs, with the Vikings loss last year. Exactly. And it's like, dude, the Bills lost 4 Super Bowls in a row.
Yeah, I mean, back to back. I guess the big plays in which how they lost. But
yeah, I guess that's true.
I guess it depends on what play it is, and you know, the outcome of the game. Certainly, you know, the play last year in the NFC Championship game, or the you know, the before the NFC divisional round, before the NFC championship game was very costly. And this, I mean, who knows? They may have ran the clock out and the Rams may not have had a chance to come back and win. But that was a very, just an unfortunate call. And again, I think it's a point now, RJ, where the officials really don't know what to call because they're afraid to make a call. If they make a call, they're going to be wrong. And if they're wrong, and I think that there's been this, relying on instant replay so many times, but, you know, unfortunately that call was not a, you know, scoring play where they could review, but I think they get a little, I would say, reluctant to make a call just because they're afraid of every, you know, all the negativity and every, the controversy that's going to create, and not really sure what call it's going to be.
I will say, and I feel like this is a bit of an unpopular opinion, and I certainly believe it's an unpopular one in New Orleans, but you mentioned letting guys play. I'm a fan of that. I'm a fan at this stage, let guys play. I mean, it's unfortunate because that's definitely a missed call, but I mean, it's hard because, you know, you end up in situations where, you know, like the Chicago-Philadelphia game where the refs blow a whistle because they don't let the play go on, and then you can't reverse it because the whistle was blown. And so it's a catch-22 in some ways. What do you think about the Rams head of the Super Bowl? I mean, you know, I don't know if you know this, Tony. Sean McVay is a genius.
Well, he's a tremendous coach. And you think about, yeah, think of, and I think everyone has said the every superlative and the way to describe him is a play caller and a coach. And you know, I think that it's very difficult. And you know, back to the play calling, or not play calling, but the officials. I mean, I think that we're so dependable on being corrected. When I say we, I mean the officials in the National Football League, that there is this. You know, it enables these coaches, you know, excuse me, the officials, you know, to make have human errors and to be reviewed and overturned. And I think it just needs, it's quite the contrary of that. I think that there's so much reliability on technology and to overturn it and review it. Then I think we kind of desensitize with really what human, you know, choices should be as far as a call, if that makes sense. But, you know, as far as the Rams going, I think it's going to be a tremendous matchup against the Patriots. It's the first time they've been, since 2002. And I read something that's the last time Tiger Woods had won the Masters.
Hey.
So it's been a long time since I read that today. And, you know, and both of us love golf, but it's some irony there. But it's been a long time since they've been back to the big show.
Well, right on. And I believe that Super Bowl was in – no, that was in the Superdome, not in Atlanta. So pretty close, you know, obviously, Dirty South, whatever you want to call it. But
yeah,
I guess I'm a little excited. I mean, it kind of feels like, well, the Rams have been the story. Let's see them do it. Let's see what they've got. And I know I'm a big uniform guy. They are officially wearing their throwback uniforms, so I'm a big fan of that. I will say, before we move to the AFC Championship game, does it make you feel even just 1% better as a Cowboys, you know, supporter, that they lost to the NFC champions? You know what I mean? You could say
doesn't hurt as bad considering, yeah. We hear that. Well, at least they're going to the Super Bowl and we got beat by them. I think to a certain degree, maybe just a little bit. It just maybe doesn't hurt as bad. But the Rams, again, it's amazing the different game plans that they had compared to what the Cowboys game and the game this week. When they beat the Saints, is that they ran the football all over the Cowboys. I mean, they didn't really were able to do that against the Saints, and I think a lot of people don't really give them enough credit. But I think it's good. The Rams haven't been back in a long time. It's an interesting story. The whole Jared Goff about him meeting up with Sean McVay, their marriage, and you know, here you go, you have a team that's going to the Super Bowl, and one of the youngest coaches to ever take a team to the Super Bowl. So it's quite a unique story.
You mentioned Jared Goff, and Tony, I had a tweet, I'm gonna be honest, the tweet upset some folks. And I was not trying to be combative. I was actually just trying to be matter of fact.
Were you innocent about that tweet?
I was very innocent, if I'm being honest.
Naive.
So Jared Goff's going to the Super Bowl. You know, however much you attribute the Rams' success to him, whatever. But the fact remains, he's going to the Super Bowl. He's a Super Bowl participating quarterback. And Jared Goff was the number one overall draft pick in 2016. And the second overall draft pick that season was Carson Wentz. And Carson didn't go to the Super Bowl last year, but, you know, we all know that Carson Wentz had a lot to do with the reason the Eagles went to the Super Bowl. He doesn't get the same credit as somebody who plays in the game and wins it, but you get the point. The guy, you know, did a lot to get his team there. So you've got both of those quarterbacks from 2016 that have now, at the very least, contributed to their team getting to the Super Bowl. The other big quarterback to emerge from that draft class is Dak Prescott. And Dak, unfortunately, has never played in an NFC Championship game. I mean, I say never. It's been 3 years. I was just tweeting that. You know, I mean, you look at those guys are forever linked because they were drafted together. And Carson has a bit of an asterisk with his career because of what he's faced injury-wise. I think right now you look at it, it's still really hard to rank the three of them because there are some kind of finicky details to them.
I'll give Jared Goff. I'll give him without a doubt.
Well, yeah, he's probably class. Number one. Sure.
Yes. But Carson Wentz, yeah, I'll give him the fact that his team went there, but I'm not so sure without Nick Foles. And look, we'll never know this. Mm-hmm. Had they had gone on and won the Super Bowl, I mean, probably. I mean, Carson Wentz is a tremendous player, but very young. So, yeah, I'll go with that. Two guys out of that class have been the Super Bowl. And then you have Dak Prescott, who is, fourth season in the National Football League and is still searching. This franchise, the Cowboys franchise, has been searching for a long time, though, to get back, 20-something years now. So I think in time, hopefully it will happen sooner than later. But, yeah, I guess that's a tremendous way you judge a football class as far as quarterback play. Think about it. I mean, there's not too many classes when you look in the National Football League, the quarterbacks come out that have been to the Super Bowl, especially in the same class.
Totally. I mean, and that's what happens. When guys go 1 and 2, you got quarterbacks to go to the top 2 picks. They're forever connected.
Great
because
point.
Of that.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
And so, I mean, if you saw the tweet and you were agitated, because I know there were a lot of people, I truly was not trying to slight Dak. I was just saying it's true that he hasn't been. But it is, because you have the weird Eagles factor, it's hard to evaluate them against one another. Dak has a playoff win, for example. Carson Wentz doesn't in a technical sense because he hasn't been a part of any himself. You mentioned Nick Foles. Before we get to the AFC Championship game, I might as well say it now. There was a report that came out on Monday. And again, this is Blogging the Boys and the 750, and we're all things America's team, but there's a lot going on in the world, and this has a lot to do with the Cowboys. Philly Voice, one of the best places for Philadelphia Eagles coverage, had a report, Tony, on Monday morning that some Eagles players view Carson Wentz as selfish and egotistical. And the report cited that, you know, he was very, I don't want to say combative, but very, matter of fact, things have to work the Carson Wentz way. That offensively, he refused to do some things that the Eagles had in place because those were Foles' plays. That when Carson Wentz was involved, he was more specific about targeting Zach Ertz, for example. It is worth noting that Zach Ertz set the record for most catches in a season by an NFL
yes.
tight end, so that kind of makes sense. And a lot of prominent Eagles came out and denounced this. Chris Long and Zach Ertz himself and Nate Sudfeld. A lot of Eagles came out and said, Carson's a great guy, whatever, that report's garbage. But I will say that if there's any current professional athlete that has a right to feel insecure, it's probably Carson Wentz. Because this dude watched Nick Foles live his dream and almost had to do it again. Do you think that, A, it makes sense that Carson is egotistical, and B, is that normal from quarterbacks? Because that's what a lot of people have been saying.
I'm not going to say egotistical. I'm going to say probably defensive a little bit, mm-hmm. because as you just mentioned, to see someone do your job better and you not be part of that run and to win the Super Bowl and the MVP, and I mean, that's...
He has a statue. They built Nick a statue.
Well, exactly. So how do you expect someone not to be affected by that? It's hard to be like, okay, and unselfish and everything. But I don't know where that's coming from. Maybe he wants some separation of who's in charge, who's the guy. Thank God that those players and that organization had Nick Foles.
Yeah.
And was one pass away, arguably, having a chance to win the game versus the Saints. So I think the insecurity maybe in being defensive is probably valid, because I think that it's human nature. Now, I don't know how this thing perpetuates. I don't know how it gets started in the locker room. And I think everybody you talk to in the locker room will say something different about a guy. But I think when you have two quarterbacks, that one has taken you to the Super Bowl and one, and then one that's been hurt the whole time, because there is kind of whispers behind. It's like, hey, this guy can't stay healthy.
Yeah.
He's not around. You know, this, you know, Nick is, hey, look what he's done for us. Mm-hmm. So, guys, you know, this is our guy. But, we got to, say that you can't be, controversial or say anything that may, change the confidence of a quarterback and support your quarterback. But, and then, B, what you said, I think it is natural for players to react that way. I don't think it's something that's never, reactions have been done where being non-defensive to me, I think you'd be a little, I'd start to worry about you. And again, I think a quarterback is a very ego-driven position. Mm-hmm. And you have to have this very strong personality. But I don't really read too much into that. I think Carson Wentz, I think he's going to feel a lot of pressure this year.
Yeah.
Be interested to see what they do with with Nick Foles. But I don't think that it's something I wouldn't have a problem with. I mean, I it's human nature to feel that way.
Did you guys ever say, I'm joking for the listener, you guys ever like, I don't know, man, Bernie Kosar, he's got it. I mean, maybe we should ride with Bernie instead of Troy. I mean,
Well, you know what? It depends on who has a hot hand. And, if the guy's been playing for six games and you're 5-1, has thrown 10 touchdowns and you got a chance to go in the playoffs. I mean, that's a prime example of that was in the 91 division playoff game when
right.
Steve Berline, Troy wanted to play, but Jimmy went with Steve Berline, and we saw what that did for us. We had a horrible offensive performance that day. But I think it's totally different with this quarterback because he's got so much confidence. And I think he's got a lot of confidence in your teammates, and I think that's huge.
It's such an interesting thing that's happening with the Eagles, because I think we all agree that Carson is by far the better player. But for some reason, the Eagles are such a better team when led by Foles. Tony,
and that's hard to justify. Right. You go with the other guy.
The Oscars, I think, will be like in a month. Have you ever seen, Tony, the movie Pearl Harbor with Ben Affleck and Liv Tyler?
Tremendous movie.
Right. So
long. it's action-packed.
So you know how in the movie Ben Affleck's dating Liv Tyler, and mm-hmm. then she thinks that Ben Affleck has died, so she hooks up with Josh Hartnett.
And then
ultimately Josh Hartnett gets her pregnant and is the father of her child, and he and Ben Affleck go on the mission, and Josh Hartnett dies. If you haven't seen Pearl Harbor, sorry, the movie's like 20 years old. That's your fault.
It's a great movie, though. It's kind of timeless.
But
it
so
really is.
You know how at the end of the movie go ahead.
No spoiler here.
Well, so the end of the movie, Ben Affleck has, you can tell he's reunited with Liv Tyler, and he's raising his best friend's son, that is, biologically his. I've thought long, Tony, that that movie describes who the Eagles are. Ben Affleck is Carson Wentz. He was the boyfriend. He was the guy. he was the one. Liv Tyler, in this instance, is the Eagles fan base, if you want to call it that, or the Eagles organization. And Josh Hartnett is Nick Foles. And he, Carson got hurt. Ben Affleck, they thought he was dead. Josh Hartnett comes in and gets her pregnant, and the child represents the first ever Super Bowl and all the glory that came. Because we're not
the finished product.
Yeah, because I think what's so special about this is we're not talking about what happened to these guys. Didn't happen for the Jacksonville Jaguars. It happened to one of the most rabid, passionate, you know, cities in America when it comes to sports. I mean, it's a very, very special thing to have done this for the Philadelphia Eagles. And so I find it interesting. And now that we're in the offseason, all people can do is talk about how people might think that Carson's egotistical.
And that's a situation, too, that's going to happen and they have to deal with. You know, what are they going to do with Nick Foles? I mean, they're going to, you know, I know that they owed him $1 million. I think they paid him $1 million bonus and gave him, he was short, I think, of plays and ended up honoring his contract. And so I think there's got to be some loyalty there. Not too many teams do that.
Right.
When you look at that. But, I mean, what he's meant to the franchise, I mean, $1 million for Nick Foles, a drop in the bucket when you consider what he's done for that franchise.
Well, and think about that. Carson's probably at home. What are you doing giving him $1 million? He didn't earn it. What are you doing? But okay.
Well, Carson, I guarantee it. If you continue to stay on the field, you're probably going to have one of those huge $150 million, $200 million contracts that Patrick Mahomes is supposed to sign in 2020.
I want to get into quarterback contracts a little bit. Before we do, the AFC Championship, Tony, the quarterback who lost to Nick Foles last year in the Super Bowl. Man, Pat Mahomes was special. It looked cold. You know, I don't know if I feel this way 100%, but I kind of think that every AFC Championship game should be played at night at Arrowhead. It was gorgeous. I mean, just a perfect football game. And the New England Patriots, man, they just... I mean, I don't know why people doubt them anymore. I mean, I don't know if anybody doubts them, but I mean, for a long time, and a lot of this is that I'm a San Antonio Spurs guy, I used to hate LeBron James. I'm so happy that I've gotten over that and I can appreciate his greatness, because someday, you know, I'll tell my kids about that, and someday I'll tell my kids about watching Tom Brady, because that dude is something else.
It's amazing, and when you watch it, I just felt like, I was mesmerized because, you know, you look at the game and you look at the course of both quarterbacks, and you got a guy that's Tom Brady, 41 years old, and, oh, by the way, you wouldn't know it by the way he plays. I mean, he looks like he's ageless. It's effortless. It's he's cool hand Luke. He's got ice in his veins. And there's so many things you can describe Tom Brady. But just how easy it looks for him. And in that game, think about it. I mean, there was a controversial call in that, the Julian Edelman catch, and had to review it.
Oh, my gosh.
That was crazy. So it just, you know, after the first game, we were just like, I kind of breathing and like, okay, we got over that.
Oh, and it was right into it, yeah.
Oh, it was the same emotion and just the same. You're looking at different angles. And then Tony Romo, which I think is just gets you, just narrates it's like a great narration of a movie, and just a narration of everything and excitement and watching Tom Brady and Patrick Mahomes and the Tom Brady, what he did in that last series and took his team down and scored. You're right. I mean, how can you ever, you know, bet against those cats, and especially in postseason play? I mean, it was just remarkable to watch.
They converted 3 third-and-10s. I mean,
that's ridiculous.
They're so, you know, and you look at, you know, those conversions. I mean,
and they were lasers.
Yeah,
we're talking about just lasers, right? Tom, you're 41 years old. You're not supposed to do that, son.
And I'm not trying to take away from Tom Brady, but you look at those, and Julian Edelman is wide open. And you just think, like, how is this possible? Who you know, do
open
you—
Open the middle
yeah,
every time.
Yeah, do
is
you
this
not—
like wide filled out and— Get everybody out on the edges, and Julian Edelman is right.
But
some of those throws were pinpoint. I mean, they were lasers.
Oh, for sure.
I mean, they were just in a spot where it was hard to defend. And again, we're talking about an overtime, as you said, converting on three third down conversions of 10 yards or more. I mean, that's not supposed to happen.
It's not real. You know, you're right. I mean, Tony Romo is just fantastic. I mean, he really— I really, you know, it sounds like a simple note, but he really does enhance the experience of watching football. And because he's so charismatic, because he knows when to be excited and he knows when to be analytical and he knows when to calm down, and he can sense the lull in the game where he needs to crack a joke, you know, and things like that.
His timing's great and everything.
Seriously.
When on his call.
And him, you know, begging the Patriots to go to Gronk and then them finally doing it was just, it was such a great redeeming.
And that
game
was a hell of a catch and throw there.
Man, it was, you know, I think it really sucks for Andy Reid. I mean, I think he's a guy that everybody loves to root for, and Pat Mahomes, and I think that's made a little bit better by the fact that you feel like, well, they'll be back, but then you also think it's so hard to get back. It's so hard, so you just never know, but man, Patriots, Rams, we're going to hear for 2 weeks about the young genius versus the old genius, about how the Rams started the dynasty for the Patriots. I mean, it's a good game. I mean, I think I really feel like it's the two best teams, and so I'm excited to see it.
9 Super Bowl appearances. There's like 8 or 9 teams that Tom Brady's got more appearances in the Super Bowl than 9 other football, or
he's
10,
got,
I think.
He's got more than everybody. The Cowboys, Steelers, and Broncos have been to 8.
Yeah, but just think about it. There's like 10 or 12 teams in the National Football League that Tom Brady's been in more Super Bowl appearances than them, and that's – I mean, think about that. But the fact that you won 9, you know, AFC championships and you're in 9 Super Bowls, the greatest of all time. I don't think anyone would – you'd have to persuade me to find another player that's better than Tom Brady in the history of the NFL.
So I like to collect, like when the Cowboys win the division, I like to get the NFC championships cap, and I like to get a lot of caps like that. It would be expensive to be a Patriots fan. And just, I mean, every year you got to get a division cap, and just about every year you got to get a conference championship cap.
That's
a
great problem to have, though, isn't it?
It really is. I will say, selfishly, Tony, this is my 3rd year going to Radio Row, but I've only been to 1 Super Bowl game, and it was Super Bowl 51, the 28-3 comeback. And so, as much as I respect Tom Brady, selfishly, I don't want them to win another, because I want to be able to say I was at his last one. But I think that I don't know who you pulling for. But, you know, 2 weeks out, who are you pulling for?
I would be. I'm probably one of the opposite people that wants to cheer for someone that's never been there before, mm-hmm. like the Rams. They've been there, but they haven't been to 9 Super Bowls. But I mean, I'm cheering for the GOAT. I mean, I'd like to see greatness. And look, I don't have a dog in the fight. Obviously, I mean, I don't really care. To me, I just want to see a great football game. I mean, I'd like to see the Rams win, but again, I just like to see the old guy. He represents the generation. And look, you know, playing Vogue, and it's like he's 25. And I don't know. I think I may hold my thoughts on that.
We'll get into it later, you know, as the game comes up. Greatest, they've got the greatest quarterback of all time, greatest tight end of all time, and the greatest coach of all time. It is hard to root against them, certainly. But again, the most important thing, Tony, is that the Rams are going to wear the throwbacks. That's the most important thing about this game. So, you know.
Yeah, because I know you're all about the fashion, and I do like the Rams. I do like the throwback uniforms. And look, if it works, I'm very superstitious. You got to go and just continue that with the throwbacks.
No doubt. Okay, so that takes care of sort of NFL news as it stands. And again, we'll be back later this week to kind of talk more Super Bowl and whatnot. And maybe by then, more Eagles will have come out and denounced that Carson Wentz is egotistical. But on a Cowboys note, Tony, it was our first weekend without Cowboys football, first of many, unfortunately. Although you mentioned we're inside 100 days of the Masters, so that's a good thing. But anyway, getting focused.
The light at the end of the golf tunnel.
Yeah, there was a fair bit of news that came out, and we have to say right now, if you're listening to the 750, Tony and I are having this conversation on Monday, January 21st at about 4:00. So a lot can change, a lot can happen, somebody could be hired and fired and whatever. And so Tony, the Dallas Cowboys fired Scott Linehan. They finally did it. They finally moved on. They finally, you know, ripped off the Band-Aid. And I feel bad for him because he's a human being, and I don't think that we should ever celebrate anybody getting fired. But the world, the world basically threw a parade.
The Twitter world, it was having a big celebration. And I think that it was, you know, we talked about last week whenever, you know, Jason Garrett had his State of the Union address to the media after the game, and started asking questions of, hey, you know, they're going to be any change in the coaching? Now we're keeping the staff, everyone's intact. And then Stephen Jones comes out and he's like, well, hey, we haven't made any decisions. And then Jerry doubles down on that. And then was it 2 days later, Scott Linehan gets fired. And someone actually sent me a text message. I'm like, what? I mean, I was expecting them to be there for a couple more weeks, but I think they've already made their decision. But you know, just kind of, I mean, I don't just kind of ask you that. Just you want to ask a question? Was Jason? Did he know that Scott Linehan was going to get fired, or was he just trying to just keep everything and without getting anyone information to the media? You just kind of wonder if he already knew that decision had been made.
Well, there's a few possibilities. One of them is that he did know and he was just putting on a front for the media, and he lied. That's one possibility. Another possibility, although I think this is less likely, but if you're a conspiracy theorist, you certainly like this. Another possibility is that he wanted to keep Scott Linehan, which is why he said what he did. And then Jerry said, oh, hell no, Garrett. Oh, no, we ain't going to keep no Scotty, no. And so that's when, the corner turned, so to speak. Personally, I think that he had to have known way long ago that there was no way that Scott could survive, just from a public, perception. Because there had to be a fall guy. There had to. That's just a matter of the way the world works. There had to be a fall guy.
Yep.
And I think he knew that it had to be Scott, and I think that he tried to be kind about it and diplomatic. I don't think that lying the way he did was diplomatic. A lot of people do. I think, actually, and we talked about this last week, I think that last Monday was one of the worst days that Jason Garrett has ever had behind a microphone, because we're talking about a guy that is so well-polished all the time, and he said, you're right, oh, I expect him to come back, and then later, Stephen Jones walked those comments back, and then later, Garrett said, oh, I don't know what I said. I mean, he played dumb. How often does he play dumb? And so,
exactly.
That makes the whole thing smell a little fishier, certainly. But, I mean, I think ultimately he had to have known. Maybe he just didn't want to admit it himself.
I think that, look, it's like a player. You defend each other, and there's a certain amount of loyalty. People don't like to see someone get fired, especially if it's, in your fraternity and a colleague of yours. You support him, and, maybe his way of supporting him and, putting that face out there that I don't know anything. The only thing I know is that how he's monotone. He's very got that stern voice, and maybe he just felt like he wanted to present that. And I really deep down inside, I think they knew that there's going to be some changes, but at that point they just didn't want to discuss it. And I don't blame him at that point, but boy, he just really looked really bad when both the general manager, I guess, Stephen Jones and the owner general manager double down and said, we haven't decided we're making decisions. And then 2 days later, Scott Linehan gets fired.
Well, and not only that, but Garrett said in his State of the Union, you mentioned, he said, he was asked who has kind of final say over the team, and he had to say Jerry Jones. And then he was asked if him or his representation had any conversations about an extension with the Jones family. He said no. The whole day made him look like a punk, if we're being honest. I mean, he got punked pretty hard. This is the truth. And, the guy has a lot of, pros and a lot of cons, and for the most part, he has always handled the public side of his job very, very well. But last Monday was not a good one for him, and it does feel like this was a battle he kind of lost. But so Scott Linehan's out, so that means, okay, you need a new offensive coordinator. Who's it going to be? And there are all sorts of rumors swirling, Tony. Again, make sure you realize, if you're listening, that we're talking on January 21st, because something could have changed. But the Cowboys, Tony, are bringing back John Kitna. He's going to be the quarterback's coach. Yeah. What do you think about John Kitna?
Well, I was kind of surprised that he just took the offensive coordinator job for San Diego Fleet, which is the American Alliance Football League that they're forming. And
that's the Commanders' first opponent, by the way.
Right. So the San Antonio Commanders. Oh, by the way, you're doing the you have pre and post game, or are you doing for the, official?
That's right. ESPN San Antonio's your home.
Pre and post game, so congrats on that. I know you're my partner. He wears a lot of hats and wears them very well. But John Kitna, I mean, he's in the National Football League for a long time, obviously with Detroit, and familiarity with the Dallas Cowboys. Was a head coach at Waxahachie, which is probably 30 minutes south of Dallas in a community. So he's had a lot of experience and obviously the coaching. I don't know. I think John Kitna, to me, if I'm looking at this, I'm looking at more than just a quarterback coach opportunity. I'm looking for maybe a segue to one day being a play caller, because ultimately I think that that's what he wants to do.
Mm-hmm. That's what he was going to do with for the fleet. He was going to be their offensive
right, coordinator. Right, right. The play caller there. And I don't know what this is going to turn into, but I think it's a tremendous decision. I think John Kitna is a tremendous guy, highly respected by everyone in the National Football League. As I just mentioned, has had coaching experience at a high school level, and he was taking the offensive coordinator job for this new American Alliance Football League. So I think it's a good fit. I think it's a good fit for the development of hopefully Dak. And now, just as far as the offensive coordinator, remains to be seen. We've heard rumors that maybe Kellen Moore may be promoted to that, which I really kind of scratched my head on that. I'm not too really I'm not too thrilled about that decision. I don't know. It may be different, but I think that's a good it's a good pick for them to go out and find someone like John Kitna. I think it'd be one of those quarterback whisperers.
I totally agree. The guy's got a lot of skins on the wall. His days with the Lions are well known. Days with the Cowboys, days with the Cincinnati Bengals, if you want to go far back. But so if he's going to be the team's quarterback coach, they already had a quarterback's coach. And his name is Kellen Moore. And so
I think is just really weird, RJ. Right. Really, it's kind of quirky the way they're handling this whole deal.
Totally, but so if John's taking Kellen's job and Kellen's not getting fired, that means Kellen needs a new job. I mean, you know, and so maybe they're going to call him passing game coordinator. Who knows? But it does seem at the very least like Kellen Moore's going to be involved. Maybe not as the outright offensive coordinator. We did find out from Chris Mortensen reported on Sunday that Jason Garrett is in line to call the plays himself in 2019. So it looks like we're going to have some sort of overall brain trust of former Cowboys quarterbacks in Jason Garrett, John Kitna, and Kellen Moore. Do you think that, you know, you put all that together with the duct tape and wiring that is Doug Nussmeier and Sanjay Lal, you think you put all those guys in a room, does that make you feel confident?
Well look, I think Kellen Moore needs to be seasoned more, because he played 6 years in the National Football League, and you know, a lot of the people that, you know, I've read stuff about him that he, you know, he's a kid that draws plays up on a piece of paper. Who doesn't?
But Tony, they say he's a genius.
Well, yeah, I mean he's a genius. But well, if he is, and he's that, you know, if they had that much respect for him, then you know, give him a shot as a play caller. But what kind of offense is he going to implement? Is it going to be some of the Scott Linehan? Is it going to be a total different offense? His creativity, formations. You know, maybe he'll make and expand a little bit and kind of cultivate a little bit and make it unique with different formations and looks, and not just where it's just, you know, we're going to throw, you know, this is a whole new playbook, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. But I just think Kellen Moore, if he's got the Midas touch and he's got that football mind and he understands the game, I'm like anyone else. You know, Sean McVay is what, 30 years old?
32. I believe. 32? I think he's turning 33 this week.
But Sean's had more experience as an offensive coordinator. I've had a little bit more experience, but I'm sure Kellen Moore's been around the game a long time.
Sure, I mean he's from Boise State. We know how much the Cowboys love their Broncos.
Yeah, but I mean play calling and you know, it's totally different. But I think he's a young dude, and I think that's one thing about the National Football League is not reluctant to change when it comes to bringing in a younger minded type of play caller, and maybe Kellen Moore will give you that millennial, that type of play calling, the offenses that are a little bit of college and NFL kind of blended together.
Okay, well, you know, I mean, that's fair. I mean, so first of all, I don't think it's...
But not much experience.
Right. I don't think it's fair to just assume it's a disaster. And you're not doing that. I'm just, you know, because there's a lot of people who are like, Kellen Moore, that's it? That's the brilliant plan?
No, I'm really saying I wouldn't have a problem with giving him a chance, but you're bringing John Kitna.
It's fair to doubt it, though. I mean, it's fair to be, you know, on the fence, I think.
But I mean, then you have to, then you got to consider, well, who are you going to bring in here? Are you going to go out and hire someone that's out there as an offensive coordinator, Jason Garrett? Maybe he can, if he's going to take over the more of the play calling and have, as you just mentioned, kind of an offensive specialist in Kellen Moore. Mm-hmm. Is it going to be a three-headed monster where they just, you know, three heads come together and decide if we're going to try to make this offense a little bit more fluid and a little bit more open. I mean, there's a lot of ways you can look at this, RJ.
Well, I think it's also worth noting, just in the stew that is all of this, and man, some stew sounds good, by the way. It's cold. Like, this is the time of year you want to eat some stew. You know what I mean? When it's cold outside.
Chili.
Oh, that's a good point. Do you put beans in your chili?
Yeah. I like the red beans.
Respect.
Yeah.
Respect. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, so
cheese and jalapenos and
onions.
We haven't talked about food in a long time on here, have we?
We'll fix that sooner. Yeah. But okay. So another thing that in this stew and the chili, one of your good friends, Ed Werder, had a report last week that the Cowboys had looked into a prominent offensive assistant coach that had given him a call. And he had that report, I believe, on Thursday and said that it had happened in the last 48 hours at that point in time. Now, we found out when Scott Linehan was fired, he released his own statement, and he said that that happened on Wednesday. So all of that timeline kind of lined up that, you know, theoretically the Cowboys fired Scott Linehan and then called whoever this mysterious offensive assistant coach is that Ed Werder reported on. And so Ed Werder did sort of announce that he wasn't obviously going to reveal who it was, but that coach had been signed on to a staff already. If you kind of, you know, do enough Venn diagramming and figure out who is who and whatever, it looks an awful lot like Ed Werder was talking about John DeFilippo, the former offensive coordinator of the Minnesota Vikings, who is now going to coordinate the offense in Jacksonville. And so here's what that says to me, and I'm talking about independent of who Flip is. But what that says to me is that the Cowboys fired Scott Linehan and said, okay, we need somebody that we can trust. We need a different set of eyes in here. Let's call John DeFilippo. And for whatever reason, that didn't work out. And now, if they're saying, okay, well, let's go with this brain trust plan, that is, at the very least, their second plan. And that's the part that's concerning to me, is that it's a bit of a settlement from whatever the original plan was. Maybe they didn't like John DeFilippo. Who knows? But this was not, the first direction that they wanted to go in.
You know, this has Jerry Jones. I want guys in here that I have familiarity with. And you mentioned, you know, the guy that they wanted to, you know, they ended up taking another job. Then we're going to move on to plan B. And I think plan B is, okay, well, here we are. We need to, we fired Scott Linehan. And what do we need to do to kind of revamp this and make it put more energy and put some different variances? Okay, well, Kellen Moore is 30 years old, supposed to have this big football mind. And, you know, who knows? I mean, Kellen Moore, this may be, this may be the beginning of a really – prosper. I mean, I don't know. I mean,
no, he's totally possible.
I'm trying to spin it where it's a positive thing. Mm-hmm. And then the whole deal with Kitna and Jason Garrett. I don't like it. I wish they would just go out and just maybe find someone else and, you know, different to bring in here. But I think on the flip side, I'm a little ambivalent, because then you go out and you got to change the whole offense.
Sure.
And you got the same players here, so you really you got to have, if you're going to go out and find an offensive coordinator, it's like, look, you know this is your offense, so he's going to change different things. So maybe this is their way, regardless if they struck out on a potential offensive coordinator, but still have this collectively the three guys that this brain trust that they were talking about, and maybe they're going to try to go that direction. But I just think it's unsettling to me.
I think that's fair. It's
a certain point.
Yeah, it's unconventional in a lot of ways, you know, just from a respect of, and for what it's worth, they could go a totally different direction. You know, nothing is official at this point.
I think they should have did this, and we talked, if they were going to change the direction, they should have fired Scott Linehan halfway during the season.
That's a great point. That's what I was about to say, because the part of this that's scary, for lack of a better word, is you missed out on all of the hot available minds, because while you were in the playoffs, and respect on beating the Seattle Seahawks,
bingo,
but while you were in the playoffs for 2 weeks, all the hot and sexy names went. And so now you are kind of, you know, you're making a stew, and it's kind of like, you know, when like a hurricane's coming and you go to the grocery store like the day before and there's like no
everything,
water.
There's nothing on the shelf. Yeah. There's nothing.
It's like that, you know? And so I think this is a really interesting dynamic, and we'll learn more over the next few months. If Jason Garrett gets extended, for example, I think that says a lot about the way they view this. But if Jason Garrett does not get a contract extension, put yourself in those shoes, and I mean you, Tony, and whoever's listening, because if it was me, and you know, I was my career was on the line, I would not want to trust that to a first-year play caller 3 years out of football in Kellen Moore. However, you know, much he was going to be helped by John Kitna and me, myself, as Jason Garrett. I think that's an awfully bold bet to make if you're going to do something like that. You know, just because, I mean, again, and I don't know, maybe you know, I would think myself that he would have to feel very safe to make a move like that, because that's a really risky thing.
Yeah, and I don't know this for sure. I don't know how smart John Kitna is. He's football smart, obviously. He played in the National Football League and, you know, his coach and had experience and, you know, really just coached in high school. So I don't know how much you know credibility that is. It just like I don't know Kellen Moore. Mm-hmm. And so when I'm looking at the two things, I'm thinking, well, who would you rather have? Would you rather have Jason Garrett, which has been been offensive coordinator, has had a ton of experience, but we've seen there, been there, done that, right? Mm-hmm. Okay, now you have Kellen Moore, which is, yeah, maybe he's got a young mind, and then John Kitna. And I don't know, if I was going to pick one of those guys as an offensive coordinator, I would probably go with John Kitna, because I think maybe that may be a little safer, but then I'd waver back and forth because I think, well, Kellen Moore has been coaching, been around the coaching staff, and, you know, they have familiarity with him and what he's done with this offense and just being around Dak Prescott. Dak Prescott says he's a tremendous football mind. He's learned a lot from him, and which goes a long way with this whole relationship. So that's a question I'm at. But if it's a tandem deal, it may work and it may not work, because I don't think they're going to say, look, Kellen Moore, we're going to give you the offensive playbook, or it's your offense, and let's see what you can do, son.
Sure. I mean, it's a weird – I mean, we're talking – these are the names here. If we're talking,
but it doesn't surprise me about the Cowboys. They don't do things the conventional way, right?
No. I mean, that's what – you know, we're talking about – these are the names here. Jason Garrett, who sort of grew up in the Cowboys system, so to speak.
Yep.
Although, obviously, spent time with Nick Saban and other teams. But then we're talking about John Kitna, who is a product of the Cowboys system, went basically from playing with them to coaching, as you said, at a high school level, mm-hmm. and so on. We're talking about Kellen Moore, who's grown up in the Cowboys way. So all these people who are disciples of one religion, and you're getting all of them in here, and that religion hasn't been enough, you know? And so it's
but Kellen Moore has been a coach for 1 year, right? This is first year as a quarterback's coach.
Correct. He was in the NFL just last season.
Right. So he doesn't have that much experience.
Well, and this
which I have no problem. You know, it's kind of like Tony Romo, and people talked about that this week after the game. Tony Romo, you know, he seems to me that he's got a football mind. He's very smart, obviously, and passionate. I mean, I would probably hire that guy right now.
Well,
just because what he knows and been playing the game so long. So maybe it shouldn't be the measurable on how much you play or how much coaching experience have. It's the bottom line is, what do you know?
The Romo is a coach thing, and you and I were texting about this the other day. I was on the radio the other day here in San Antonio, and goodness gracious, I've had it up to here with people suggesting Romo to be offensive coordinator. Is it totally possible that he could be a fantastic coach? Duh, that's of course possible. But to act like he would come in and just, you know, light the NFL up is kind
of... Why wouldn't he, though?
Well, what, I mean, he could, what, but...
Well, you think about, he knows every nuance, knows every defense, and he's kind of showcased some of that when you watch him, you know, when you listen to him broadcast. I mean, what would make him a good football mind? If the guy's is brilliant and sees different offenses and sees, can read everything, I think that's how you interpret a play caller. And then also the timing of it. So I don't really agree with that, because I think that he can be, if that's what he wanted to do.
Well, there are a lot of reasons to believe that he would be a great coach. I totally can admit that. My only point is I'm just not willing to admit that the guy would walk in year one and create the greatest offense to ever live. And that's the way it's, you know, that's the way my Twitter mentions look. That's all I'm saying. And, you know,
I agree with that.
People act like, oh, well, let's just do it. Let's just have him be offensive coordinator. So this is the way the pitch would go, Tony. And I'm talking about you as Tony Romo now, not Tony Casillas. This is the pitch. Hey, dude, guess what? I know that you make like $7 million a year working for CBS, and you get to travel the country, and you get to eat at all the best steakhouses in America. You get to hang out with Jim Nantz. The guy gets you tickets to the Masters and NCAA tournament and all this awesome, cool stuff. And the world loves you. Everybody thinks you're amazing. Well, check this out. I will offer you like $100,000. And I know that right now
end of interview.
Yeah, I know that right now you work let's maybe 4 days a week. You know, you watch a lot of film, I understand it. And you do that from home from your mansion and it's awesome. But check it out. Instead of doing that, you can come to the Star and you can get here at 5 AM and leave at 1 AM and just spend your day in a dark room with dudes who smell like sweat. You could end up being hated because look at Scott Linehan, man. I mean, the world doesn't hate him that much, just a little bit. That could be you someday. Oh, and you could do this all. You could take all this risk and give all that up, all in the name, Tony, of helping the dude who took your job. You could help that guy win a Super Bowl. I know you never got to.
Well, I love your theory, and I love the way you you tried to present that to me. But let's say I'm not Tony Romo. I'm the guy that you listen to and as a broadcaster and someone that played in the National Football League and had a year of coaching, and you interviewed me, and I showed you my resume and what I've done and being able to identify offenses. I haven't had much experience though, okay? But this is what I've done as far as my resume. And where I'm going with this, I mean, the situation is totally, if you look at it that way, yes. I mean, what dummy would take a job like that? You're making $7 million and you're in a broadcast booth. And is you just, you just painted the picture. I mean, hell no, I wouldn't. Yeah. But if I was Tony Romo, and I think maybe we're talking about Tony Romo because the offensive mind, minus the broadcasting and what he does and the salary and everything. I think that you break it down to that, and you look at just the mind and the experience and what you've heard without maybe him being the third or fourth broadcast, you know, the 14 string broadcaster. Mm-hmm. I mean, just bring him in and just see, hey, look, what can you do? Because I love everything I'm hearing.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's about what you interview. But yeah, I mean, if you paint the picture like that, no, I mean,
that's
God,
all I'm saying.
I'm just saying that.
It's not practical. I feel like
it's not very practical. It's not realistic.
The Twitterness of it. It's just
you make $7 million. I thought he made $4 million.
It's a lot. I don't know. Even if it was four, I mean,
it'd be kind of hard to justify being a coach.
It's a bit of a fantasy, and I feel like I'm telling people that Santa isn't real, but it's a bit of a fantasy. But to your point, back to who is on the coaching staff. The other detail about Kellen Moore that I think is so critical is that he lost his job to both Dak and Cooper Rush. Both of them outplayed him in 2017, so they're expected to be coached up, both of them, by somebody.
But I don't think that I don't think that really is a factor.
Would it not be for you? I mean,
I mean, I think football is totally different. I mean, think about all the guys that play in a National Football League or play or college coaches. Majority of those guys didn't play in the National Football League.
Sure.
I mean, so think about that. Think about the guys that, you know, that really didn't make it in the National Football League and now are great coaches. So if you look at it that way, I don't think it's a personal thing. I don't think you're inferior of the, you know, just because someone took your job. I mean, to me, that's the best compliment and respect you can pay to someone that now you're their coach.
Okay, that's fair. That's
because
a fair
point. The message is different. The message is different, totally different as a coach as opposed to the player. And really, I think a lot of your great, I mean, we'll use Jason Garrett, for example. A lot of people may not think he's a great coach, but he's a better coach than he was a football player. And he's a backup quarterback and never knew his role. So when you look at what he's done now as an offensive coach, I mean, think about the people he's coaching.
Well, I mean, it's all really interesting. certainly the relationship between everybody. We'll see kind of what develops. It is Senior Bowl week, so all coaches and scouts from every NFL team are in Mobile, Alabama. We'll see if the Cowboys are networking. Maybe they were waiting for that to try to find an offensive coordinator, but there is rumors that they maybe want to talk to James Coley from the University of Georgia, so who knows what's going down, but you can rest assured that when something does happen, that we'll be here on the 750 to talk about it.
You know, and it's interesting. I did say it'd be a good indicator to, if Scott Linehan made that trip to the Senior Bowl, because that is a great networking. You know, obviously they take a lot of, you know, there's coaches and scouts to that to scout, you know, potential, obviously, guys coming into the next year's draft. But yeah, they pulled the plug on Scott Linehan. So that era is over. Now it'll be interesting to see what the new era may bring the Dallas Cowboys when it comes to the offensive play calling.
Totally. And, you know, it should be said that this is a seismic move for Jason Garrett. He doesn't fire coordinators. And if anything, the Cowboys typically phase them out the way they did Monty Kiffin, you know, with Rod Marinelli kind of ascending, and the way they did Bill Callahan when Scott Linehan took over. So the fact that he would outright fire an offensive coordinator is a very, very big move. But we'll see what happens. There's a lot to talk about this week, Tony, especially with the Super Bowl coming up. So we'll get into all that later this week. It was a pleasure as always, my dude.
You know, it is. Great Monday. And again, what a tremendous weekend. I know we all in the Cowboy Nation and blogging the boys hoped the Cowboys would be in that NFC Championship game. But again, maybe if it makes you feel everyone better. At least the Rams are moving on to the Super Bowl.
That's right. That's a good spin right there. We'll be back later this week. Enjoy your week. Stay warm. Whoever you're rooting for the Super Bowl, we hope they win. But we'll talk about it more later this week. This was the 750.
Hi, I'm Karis Fisher. I want to tell you about another podcast you should check out. It's called Recode Decode. Every week, I talk to tech and media's key players about how they're changing our world. I interview tech executives like Facebook CEO Mark Zuckerberg, political figures like Hillary Clinton, and media personalities like John Carreyrou, who literally wrote the book on Theranos. Once again, the name of the show is Recode Decode, hosted by me, Karis Fisher. You can find it on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to the show. See you there.